Because you're with a great reel. It's 9:02. You're listening to WMFO in Medford.
The song of the river, as to the sea the river flows, and the words to the tune of the sea as it turns to the moon are too long for my tongue. The song she sings is I love you. It's 5 in the morning. I should be sleeping in my bed. I hear the song of a blackbird calling the dawn, and it's gone right to my head. But I I would give you love every song I ever wrote if I was truly free. But I'm wrapped in a body dressed as a man with only words and a broken melody. But I know, and you know too, singing that same song to you. Yeah, I know, and you know too. I'm singing that same song to you. Thank you.
morning. It's 9:25. You're listening to WMFO in Medford. We heard two pieces from Jack DeJohnette's new album, along with Larry Grenadier, John Medeski, and John Schofield, and it's called Hudson, and it is a reflection on both the Woodstock Festival and some of the fine work that has been done in the Hudson Valley. We heard A Hard Rain's Are Gonna Fall by Bob Dylan, and you heard the jazz take off on that, and then Jack's piece, Song for World Forgiveness. And I thought that that was a good background to let you know that Peter Mulvey on Facebook is doing an online book club with a small volume called On Tyranny, 20 Lessons from the 20th Century by Timothy Snyder. And who is Timothy Snyder? Well, he's a Yale historian who's written a number of books, but this was a small one. And he obviously felt compelled to publish it. And I'll read you the prologue, and then you can go to Facebook, click on Peter Mulvey, and you can see the videos. He's halfway through the book now. And so if you don't feel like buying the book, or you can't get somebody to pass it on to you, you can just listen to the videos. But this is the prologue, History and Tyranny. History does not repeat, but it does instruct. As the founding fathers debated our Constitution, they took instruction from the history they knew. Concerned that the Democratic Republic they envisioned would collapse, they contemplated the descent of ancient democracies and republics into oligarchy and empire. As they knew, Aristotle warned that inequality brought instability, while Plato believed that demagogues exploited free speech to install themselves as tyrants. In founding a democratic republic upon law and establishing a system of checks and balances, the founding fathers sought to avoid the evil that they, like the ancient philosophers, called tyranny. They had in mind the usurpation of power by a single individual or group, or the circumvention of law by rulers for their own benefit. Much of the succeeding political debate in the United States has concerned the problem of tyranny within American society, over slaves and women, for example. It is thus a primary American tradition to consider history when our political order seems imperiled. If we worry today that the American experiment is threatened by tyranny, we can follow the example of the founding fathers and contemplate the history of other democracies and republics. The good news is that we can draw upon more recent and relevant examples than ancient Greece and Rome. The bad news is that the history of modern democracy is also one of decline and fall. Since the American colonies declared their independence from a British monarchy that the founders deemed tyrannical, European history has seen three major democratic moments: after the First World War in 1918, after the Second World War in 1945, and after the end of communism in 1989. Many of the democracies founded at these junctures failed, in circumstances that in some important respects resemble our own. History can familiarize and it can warn. In the late 19th century, just as in the late 20th century, the expansion of global trade generated expectations of progress. In the early 20th century, as in the early 21st, these hopes were challenged by new visions of mass politics in which a leader or a party, claim to directly represent the will of the people. European democracies collapsed into right-wing authoritarianism and fascism in the 1920s and 30s. The communist Soviet Union, established in 1922, extended its model into Europe in the 1940s. The European history of the 20th century shows us that societies can break, democracies can fall, ethics can collapse, and ordinary men can find themselves standing over death pits with guns in their hands. It would serve us well today to understand why. Both fascism and communism were responses to globalization, to the real and perceived inequalities it created, and the apparent helplessness of the democracies in addressing them. Fascists rejected reason in the name of will, denying objective truth in favor of a glorious myth articulated by leaders who claimed to give voice to the people. They put a face on globalization, arguing that its complex challenges were the result of a conspiracy against the nation. Fascists ruled for a decade or two, leaving behind an intact intellectual legacy that grows more relevant by the day. Communism ruled for longer, for nearly seven decades in the Soviet Union and more than four decades in much of Eastern Europe. They proposed rule by a disciplined party elite with a monopoly on reason that would guide society toward a certain future according to supposedly fixed laws of history. We might be tempted to think that our democratic heritage automatically protects us from such threats. This is a misguided reflex. In fact, the precedent set by the founders demands that we examine history to understand the deep sources of tyranny and to consider the proper responses to it. Americans today are no wiser than the Europeans who saw democracy yield to fascism, Nazism, or communism in the 20th century. Our one advantage is that we might learn from their experience. Now is a good time to do so. This book presents 20 lessons from the 20th century adapted to the circumstances of today. So, On Tyranny from Timothy Snyder. The first chapter is Do Not Obey in Advance. There's also chapters on Beware the One-Party State, Remember Professional Ethics, Be Kind to Our Language, Believe in Truth, Investigate, Make Eye Contact and Small Talk. The ending chapters are 19, Be a Patriot, 20, Be as Courageous as You Can. So check out Peter Mulvey on Facebook, On Tyranny. The videos are on there. He's been reading from this. And fortunately, most of the comments are a reasonable, very few trolls. And we just like to quickly bring you an update on Supreme Court religious freedom cases. The Supreme Court did finally rule in the Trinity Lutheran Church of Columbia, Inc. via Comer case, the decision states that the Missouri Department of Natural Resources grant policy was in violation of the First Amendment. The state had rejected the church's application for an improvement grant on the basis of it being a religious institution. However, the Supreme Court of the United States, hereinafter abbreviated as SCOTUS, notes that its services and its improvements were a public benefit. Therefore, the state's denial violated the Free Exercise Clause. The court hearing was more a formality than anything else due to the fact that the state had already reversed its policy midway through the legal process. But both the state of Missouri and the church also agreed to go forward with the hearing because the resulting decision could have a dramatic impact on all religious organizations seeking funding for their non-religious activities and infrastructure. June marked the two-year anniversary of the Supreme Court ruling on marriage equality, Obergefell versus Hodges. While many have benefited from the sweeping decision, there has also been steady backlash against the ruling, most of which is religious-based. One of the most famous or infamous cases occurred in August 2015 when a Kentucky county clerk refused to issue marriage licenses to same-sex couples, citing her religious belief. At the time, a U.S. District Court judge dismissed all three lawsuits against Davis, and the state eventually changed its policy, taking the clerk's name off of all marriage documentation. Davis has since returned to work. However, that's not where the story ends. The case was reopened in May after the couple pushed their appeal. Ermold et al. Versus Davis will be heard again in the U.S. District Court in Eastern Kentucky. By contrast, there is a similar case out of Colorado that involves private industry, and SCOTUS has elected to hear this one. In 2012, cake artist Jack Phillips, owner of Masterpiece Cake Shop, refused to do business with same-sex couple Charlie Craig and David Mullins. After the incident, Craig and Mullins complained to the Colorado Civil Rights Commission. The commission agreed with them, saying that Phillips had violated the state's public accommodation legislation. The complaint set off a long legal battle during which most of the rulings sided with the couple, and the 2015 marriage equality decision only helped the couple's arguments. When in 2014 the Colorado Supreme Court refused to hear the case, bakery owner Phillips petitioned SCOTUS. The High Court granted the petition. The case will be reportedly heard in October of this year. So stay tuned for cake decoration. Similarly, a Washington florist is appealing to the court system after complaints that she, like Phillips, refused to do business with a same-sex couple, citing religious reasons. Americans United has said in a recent blog post, with several related cases filtering through the court system around the country, the High Court should now definitively declare that businesses can't use religion as an excuse to discriminate. In the cases of the Trinity Church and County Clerk, the argument is one of separation of church and state. In the cases of the bakery and florist, there are concerns relating to the government's regulation of private business. While all revolve around discrimination and the honoring of religious belief, that very distinction will set these cases apart in how the courts will handle them. And now for some more music, and this is by one of my favorite local groups, Blue Heron.
to the river and got lost one time, wading round in circles, but I didn't mind. I'm gone, I'm gone, but you know I'm gonna be alright. I'm all prayed up and I'm satisfied, gonna see my baby tonight. Yeah. Hey man, what you doing with all that junk? You know I clean up your mess and take it to the county dump. Hey boy, you ought to stay at school. You know you and that girl looked like y'all was born to break the rules. Hey man, what you doing with all that junk? Can we ride with you down to the county dump? Hey boy, come on, get on the back of that truck. You and that girl, y'all have some luck. Come on.
On the next episode of Recipes for Disaster.
So we've got our neighbor Paul coming over tonight for a barbecue, which is why I prepared a delicious lemon rosemary steak marinade from my special collection of old family recipes. To make sure the steaks are extra, extra, extra tender, I left them marinating out on the counter overnight, just like Nana used to.
Maria may mean well, but without food safety, it never ends well. Always thaw or marinate foods in the refrigerator at 40 degrees Fahrenheit or below, or you could make your friends and family really sick. Maria's neighbor Paul didn't think twice about the steak he ate until he was presenting his company's financial forecast to the board. That's when a sudden bout of food poisoning made it explicitly clear that profits weren't the only thing on the rise. Watch Recipes for Disaster at foodsafety.gov. You'll learn the right steps as Maria does everything wrong. Brought to you by the USDA, HHS, and the Ad Council.
Good morning. It's 9:58. You're listening to WMFO in Medford. I don't know where our folks are, but... We'll be going out of here with some Bob Dylan, which you'll recognize. Before that, what you heard was Randall Bramblett with Garbage Man from Juke Joint at the End of the World. Dalava with Souling from the Book of Transfigurations. And Blue Heron and Scott Metcalf with the Gloria from the Anonymous Misa Sine Nomine, music from the Peterhouse Part Books, Volume 5.